This is Digital Story Podcast number 700, August 13th, 2019. Today's theme is Street Photography with the Canon G5X Mark II. I'm Derek Story. The Canon G5X Mark II is compact enough to fit in your pants pocket, but it pairs a 24 to 120 millimeter zoom lens with a 20.2 megapixel 1-inch stacked CMOS sensor. That's a lot of imaging potential in a small package. And it seemed to me worthy of serious street photography. So I headed off to South San Francisco to see what it could do. I share my findings on today's TDS Photography Podcast. First of all, before we get into street photography and that new little Canon camera, I have to say, 700 podcasts. Isn't that crazy? This is number 700. And I'm going to go to 1,000. I can tell you right now, I'm going to go to 1,000. I never would have thought that I had that many podcasts in me, but I can tell now at the 700 mark that I easily have 1,000 in me, if not more. Anyway, okay, so let's get to the street photography with a Canon G5X Mark II. So you may be wondering why my first inclination for that little Canon was for street photography. Well, I'm going to tell you a story that answers that question, and it came within minutes of my exploration of South San Francisco with this camera. So I was photographing this fabulous neon blue hotel sign that was definitely a throwback to earlier times. I was standing outside. The sign was on the side of the building, so I'm not even pointing at the building itself. The sign is jutting out from the building, and so I got a nice clear shot of it, a little bit of the edge of the building, nice blue sky. It was a beautiful morning. And I'm, you know, out there working it, working with this little Canon, having a good time, getting some nice shots. And this middle-aged man came storming out of the front door, calling to me, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" Very intense, I must say. So I lowered the camera and I turned to him and I said, "I'm taking pictures of that sign." He goes, "Well, why are you doing that?" And I said, "Well, because I like the way it looks. I'm just having fun. Look," I said. And I held out this little camera, this little Canon G5X, and said, "Look, I'm just having fun. It's just a little camera." So he looked at the camera and he looked at me. He scowled and he said, "Okay." And he went back inside. So we have come to the point where we can't even take a picture of a hotel sign on a public street without an inquiry as to our intentions. And one of the reasonable lines of defenses, at least in my mind, against this unreasonable behavior is a small camera that looks like something that just a tourist would carry. And this has happened to me many times where, you know, I'm being approached, I'm being asked, "What am I doing? What are the reasons for doing this?" This guy also asked me, you know, "What are your reasons for doing it?" And I go, "Because it's a cool shot. You know, I want to take a picture of that sign." And when you have this little camera, they go, "All right, you're just having fun. I believe you." Whereas if I had even my Olympus, in this case, even my Olympus EM1 Mark II with, you know, one of those more professional looking lenses on it, that would be a harder argument, right? That would be more difficult conversation. But the little G5X just got me out of trouble right away. And for that reason, I thought it was a good choice for the day because I knew that this part of town, South San Francisco, is its own city. It's not the south part of San Francisco, even though it is south of San Francisco. It's its own place and it has its own vibe. And, you know, I like it for street photography because it's got some really interesting stuff. But it's also, I think, a little edgier, at least in parts of it, than when I'm in the city in the more tourist locations. appearing like a tourist seemed like a really good thing to me. So there I was out there testing this camera out in the field. I only had two encounters that day. Both of them were like silly, like the hotel sign kind of thing. And both times I just flashed this little camera and people said, all right, fine, you're just having fun. Which I was just having fun. So I was thinking then, after a week of shooting with this camera, there are five things that I'd love to discuss. Why I think this is a good camera for travel, for street photography, and for family outings. So let's dig into those right now. Now that I've told you my get out of trouble story with the camera itself. Okay, first thing, you know, I'm going to do five what I consider noteworthy features of the Canon G5X Mark II. And the first one is the viewfinder system. And I'm going to include both the electronic viewfinder and the tilting LCD in the same point, because I actually use them interchangeably depending on what I needed. So the electronic pop-up viewfinder has 2,360,000 dots, and it is really cool. I like it a lot. And the way that it works is that it's hidden in the camera until you need it. And then when you need it, there's a little switch on the side of the camera. And here, I'll do it right now. You do that and it pops up. Now, even though you can see the viewfinder, when it pops up, it's not ready to use yet. And this actually threw me for a loop when I first started using the camera. I was looking through and I was going, well, how come it's dark? Why isn't it working? And there was a moment where I thought that I had a bum camera. That was not the case, however. And that's because there's a second part to this, and that is then you pull the viewfinder out of the area that pops up. And when you do that, you pull it toward the back. Then it's activated and you can look through it. And when you look through it, it's really nice. You have a nice clear image of whatever you're viewing. If you change, focal lengths, and remember we have a 24 to 120 millimeter zoom lens here, then it changes in the viewfinder. And then it has all the readouts that you want. It has, the mode and the shutter speed, the aperture. If you're using any exposure compensation, that shows, lets you know what mode you're in, how much battery life you have, all that good stuff looking through there. Now, on our Facebook page, when I mentioned that I was going to be doing street photography with this camera, I got some questions from folks. And one of the questions was, how is the viewfinder if you're looking through the left eye, because it's over on the left-hand side, and how is it when you're looking through the right eye? Well, if you're looking through the right eye, of course, then your left eye is available and, you can shoot that way. But I actually shoot with my left eye also, as some people mentioned on our Facebook page, and looking through it with the left eye, because that little back part extends out, I didn't have any problem at all. I didn't have any. So it's great for left-eyed shooters as well as right-eyed shooters. And it has that nice diopter adjustment so you can, fine-tune the electronic viewfinder to your eyesight. And it works great. And I tell you, I'm with a lot of people where if the camera doesn't have an electronic viewfinder, and we're talking about a serious camera that I would pay, some money for, then I'm not as interested in it, because life with an LCD alone is difficult. That being said, the other part of this is that the LCD that comes with this camera is a 3-inch LCD, has over a million dots, and it's tilting, and I absolutely love the tilting part. And for street photography, and it's the tilting up and down, not the swing out method, which I think is, really nice. So for street photography, I was able to do a lot of low angle work where I tilt the LCD up and, point upward. Really great for low angle shots, really easy to use. And then I could also hold the camera over my head and shoot and look at the viewfinder that way. And that's really nice, especially for me, for shooting over fences and barriers and things like that, where I want to get a nice clear view of what's on the other side. I love that holding the camera high and using the tilting LCD. Now, while I was shooting, I left the electronic viewfinder popped up and ready to go. And then, you know, depending on if you have the camera away from your eye, then the LCD is activated and you can use that to compose. When you bring the camera up to your eye, then the viewfinder activates and you can use that and you can go back and forth. Also, the viewfinder, when it does go back in the camera body by pushing it down like that, it is pretty sealed up, you know, and it doesn't look like that dust and debris can get in there easily at all. So you have the viewfinder on the far left side that pops up, and then in the middle, you have a pop-up flash, which is quite nice. I love having that. And then on the right side of the top deck, then you have the controls, the shutter button, the mode dial, exposure compensation, all that stuff. And when you do have the electronic viewfinder pushed down, then you are using the LCD for composing the shot, and it works quite well. So this tandem of having the pop-up electronic viewfinder and the tilting LCD is fabulous, and I really felt very creative. I felt like, you know, I was really working all the angles, and then when I really needed to focus on the composition, or, you know, if I was in bright sun and I didn't want any glare off the LCD, then I would use the viewfinder, and, you know, that worked very well too. So this is a super tandem for this camera, and I love the way that both are implemented. The second feature that I really like is the front control ring that I can use for more precise zooming. And you can program this control ring on the front. It goes around the lens and it has click stops. So you can click stop it. The way that I programmed it was for a step zoom setting. In other words, by doing the click stops, I can go from 24 millimeter to 28 to 35. And by the way, I get readouts in both the LCD and on the viewfinder, in the viewfinder, 24, 28, 35, 50, 85, 100, and 120 millimeters. And this is something that makes the camera start to feel more like a real camera instead of a point and shoot. Yes, you still have the rocker arm that's around the shutter button that you can use to zoom in and out. And you can do that, you know, zoo, zoo, you know, that sort of thing. But I really like being able to set it, because my brain works that way, to I'm going to shoot at 24 millimeters now. I'm going to shoot at 35 millimeters now, or 50 millimeters, and I can just use that ring that's around the zoom lens to do that. It works really nice. It's a feature that I like a lot, and I like the way that, you know, they have designed it too. And having the click stops is just really wonderful. So that is the way I have it programmed, and for me, it's really a terrific feature. The third thing that I like, a very easy to use exposure compensation ring. And this is something that where Olympus really spoiled me. They spoiled me by having exposure compensation on that ring that's around the shutter button. And then looking through the viewfinder, I get to see the adjustment in real time. I love that. I think it's one of the best things about mirrorless photography. What Canon has done is something that's almost as nice. You have a very nice exposure compensation ring that's around the mode dial on the top deck that while you're holding the camera, you can use your thumb to move it one way or another. And if you go to the menu and you enable exposure simulation, then while you rotate that dial, that exposure compensation dial, you see the results of your adjustment on both the LCD or in the electronic viewfinder. So then you get that good stuff like we're used to with mirrorless photography. It's a nice setup. I like it a lot. It works really well. And, you know, therefore you start using exposure compensation more because it's easy to use and you can see exactly what you're getting. So I think this is a terrific design feature, this camera, the way that they have exposure compensation and the way that I can use it. And by the way, you have three stops on that ring that you can go in either direction. Very nice. The fourth thing that I like is a relatively fast zoom lens. Again, as I mentioned earlier, this goes from 24 to 120 millimeters, and the maximum aperture is f1.8 at the wide end to 2.8 at the telephoto end. So the maximum aperture is never anything worse than f2.8. And it's just so handy having that, so that you don't have to jack up the ISO when you're in these different lighting conditions. You can leave the ISO at a modest level, which is good. Again, we have a 1-inch sensor here, which does quite admirably, does wonderful work. But, you know, you don't want to push it up to, you know, whatever, 128,000 ISO. Right? If you don't need to, this is not a Sony full frame. This is a 1-inch sensor on a Canon, on a much smaller Canon camera. So having that fast zoom lens, or a relatively fast zoom lens, I think is a terrific feature. And when I looked at the images on the computer afterwards, it's a good lens. You know, Canon does lenses well. This is a good zoom lens. It's good at the wide end, it's good on the long end, and it's good in between. So I like the zoom lens, I like the f1.8 to 2.8, and I like not having to jack up the ISO any higher than necessary when I'm in lower light conditions. And then the fifth noteworthy thing is versatile charging options. You know, this is something that I want from a compact camera. I want to be able to charge it via USB, which I can do with this camera. Because sometimes, you know, you have the USB cable and there's a power source, someone's laptop or a jack in the wall, or you have, you know, the brick for your iPhone, whatever it happens to be, you know, and you can just, you know, top it off right there really easily. Now, the thing that happens most times with these cameras is that if they allow USB charging, they don't give you a charging brick. And Canon gives you the brick as well. So you have all of your options open. You can charge via USB by plugging it in to a power source, or you can take the battery out, use the included power brick, which is a very nice one. It's a very compact brick. It has the prongs, the plug built into it. You don't have to use a cord. Very easy to carry around. Just throw it in your bag and you have it with you. And so you have all of your charging options available to you. You don't have to buy any extra accessories. You probably will want to buy an extra battery if you're going to use this a lot, but you don't have to buy anything to use the camera the way that you want. So I really like the versatile charging options, and I like the power brick not having a cord. Canon did a really nice job with this feature. Now, I do have a few nits as well, as you would imagine. It is a small battery. Now, the battery did get me through a full day of shooting, so that's good. However, I think the battery indicator, at least for me, has been a little less than totally accurate, in that I'll be shooting and it'll be down halfway, and I think, okay, I got half a battery left, and I'll shoot a little bit more, and then the camera will go dead on me. So it's not good at at letting you know about when it's going to run out of juice. It just sort of does it. So that's not good. And if you were going to shoot with this camera all the time, then I would just carry an extra battery with you. They're very small. They're easy to carry. It's not a problem. The worst part is having to buy the extra battery. But I think the battery indicator on this camera could be better. It's like some gas tanks, right? You're going along in the first half of the gas tank, you feel like you can drive all the way across country. And then the second half, you can't even get, you know, down the street. And it feels a little bit like that. Another thing that I'm not absolutely crazy about is that the back dial here falls right in the area where I put my thumb. And this is the dial that has the set button, has the info button, flash adjust, drive mode. Manual focus, macro mode, that little dial there. And it's just really easy to accidentally change the settings while you're just shooting with the camera, because it falls right in line with where your thumb goes there. And so I did have a little issue with that. I was going to look in to seeing if I could just deactivate that dial altogether, but then you lose the quick access to those functions. So I'm sort of torn about that. I did have one sequence. You know, I usually shoot in single shot mode unless I'm doing something specific. And, you know, when I was taking a picture of the hotel sign, for example, my thumb had accidentally moved it to high-speed burst mode. So, you know, I rattled off, like, whatever, you know, 20 shots of that sign in just a few seconds, and that wasn't what I wanted at all. So, you know, that, to me, is something that I would want to figure out, okay, how am I going to deal with this so I'm not accidentally changing the settings. And part of it is that there just isn't a lot of physical real estate on this camera. And then the third thing that I'd like to have, and there's room for it on the back panel here, is I'd love to have a custom function button. Really got spoiled with that with Olympus cameras that give you usually more than one. It'd be great just to have one or maybe two custom function buttons that I could, you know, program, you know, certain parts of the camera the way that I wanted, and could activate them by just, you know, pushing that button and then pushing that button again. So that's something that I would like to have. That being said, overall, I'm really pleased with this camera. I very much enjoyed shooting with it. It is $899, so it's a premium camera. And, you know, you do get a very nice lens that's relatively fast. You get a good 1-inch sensor that seems quite solid. And you get a lot of features. You know, you have HD and 4K movie. You have, you know, basically all the stuff that you would want on a camera like this. And you have the excellent, you know, features that I talked about, too, that I really like. So I think that this is a good camera for travel. If you just want to have a little compact with you, I think it's a good camera for street photography, especially the way things are going these days out on the streets with people just, I don't know, just wanting to hassle us for taking pictures of, you know, not even people sometimes, you know, just objects, inanimate objects, and they still want to know what we're doing. I think that having a smaller, more innocent-looking camera can be a real benefit in that situation. And then for things like family outings and so forth, it's quite good, too. It has Bluetooth. It has Wi-Fi. The Canon app, you know, is not bad at all that you use on the phone. It's a good camera. The thing that really stands out at me, though, that I truly like is the pop-up viewfinder and the tilting LCD. That, you know, and something that's this portable just makes it terrific. So I give it a thumbs up. I think every individual is going to decide if it's worth the money or not. I think if you really want it and you really need it, it's worth it. If you don't really need it, it's probably not worth it. You know, it's one of those things. I have a link to it in the show notes. If you do decide to get one, go to the show notes, click on that link. It'll take you over to B&H. And you can read all the good stuff about it. And if you decide you like it, you can order it there. This one here is a review model. I'll be sending it back because it does duplicate some of the other camera gear that I have. But if I didn't have something that filled this slot already, I would be very tempted by this camera, the Canon G5X Mark II. B&H deal of the week. I have a good one for you. The Panasonic Lumix G 25mm f1.7 a spherical lens with a UV filter in stock for $147.99. That's $100 off its normal price. And this is a handy little lens. I'll just read you a little bit about it. It has one UHR ultra-high reflective index element, pairs with two spherical elements to reduce spherical aberrations and distortions for consistent edge-to-edge sharpness and illumination. A nano-surface coating has been applied, too, that helps reduce flare and ghosting for increased contrast and color fidelity. The optical construction also helps realize a compact overall form factor measuring just 2 inches long and weighing just 4.4 ounces. This is for Micro Four Thirds camera. It's on sale right now this week for $147.99. There's a link in the show notes to take you right over to that page. That's the B&H special of the week. Samsung officially unveils a 108-megapixel ISOCELL Bright HMX mobile camera sensor. Gosh. And this is on DP Review. I have the link in the show notes. 108-megapixel ISO sensor for mobile phones. Yes, it's true, boys and girls. Let me read you this. Samsung has officially announced the 108-megapixel camera sensor. It's the first mobile sensor to feature a 1/1.33-inch size sensor. This format equates to around a 9.6 by 7.2 millimeter, which is around 40% smaller than a 1-inch sensor, but nearly three times larger than the 1/2.5-inch type chips in many smartphones. It's a quad Bayer technology. It places 4 pixels under each color of its color filter, making it easy to combine pixels to give better performance at 1/4 resolution, but also means additional processing needs to be done to attempt to replicate what a standard Bayer sensor would capture if it had 108 megapixels. All right, so the company hasn't yet revealed what those new mobile camera experiences will be that will have the sensor in it, but Samsung plans to start mass producing the ISOCELL Bright HMX in August. So it is 108 megapixels, sort of. There's a lot of camera processing and tomfoolery going on under the hood. It feels like to me we're in the megapixel wars again on all fronts. I mean, Sony's full-frame sensor cameras are boasting big-time megapixels. Canon, I know, is, you know, throwing their hat in the ring and they're working on something. And then these mobile phone manufacturers are making sensors that are the equivalent of big-time megapixels. Crazy stuff. I guess it makes for good marketing copy. At the end of the day, though, how does the picture look? That's what really matters. New course offering, online course, podcasting skills. I debuted this course last week, and it's a course on podcasting, which has been the number one request for new workshop topics. I've been working on this course for some time, and basically what it will do is take you behind the scenes of everything that you need to know about podcasting or want to know. Now, interestingly enough, I did get some mail this week, this past week, saying, I would love to come to your podcasting course, but I'm far away. No, it's not that kind of course. I designed it specifically so that you could stay exactly where you are as long as you have an internet connection and a smartphone, a tablet, or a computer that can watch and participate with the course, okay? So it is an online course, and the way that it is designed is that class will be going on for a full day. It's broken into modules. We have breaks. We have Q&A sessions, all that kind of stuff. I record those modules, and at the end of the course, after a few days, after I have a chance to clean them up and put titles on them, all that, then you will get the entire course, all those modules, available to you as a download. And then you can watch them over and over again as many times as you want. So this is going to be a lot of fun, but it is not a physical workshop. It is a workshop that you can attend wherever you are, as long as you have an internet connection. Now the dates are set for the first two courses. The first one's going to be on Saturday, October 12th. The second one is going to be on November 9th. These courses are for people that are new to podcasting and want to learn from ground zero. You're going to learn all sorts of stuff about hardware, software, concept and creation, storytelling techniques, show notes, syndication and RSS feeds, getting your show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and more. Adding music to your show and where to find it, the editing workflow, promoting your podcast, and the ins and outs of advertising and sponsorship. If you're interested in this stuff, I hope you join me. I think you're going to have a blast. All you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on workshops there. It's in, I've added it to this season's of workshops, and you'll see the two different podcasting courses right there. Choose the date that's best for you, and you can go ahead and sign up right now. If you're interested in podcasting, check it out, and hopefully I'll see you there. Hello, Virtual Camera Club News. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members. Thank you so much for supporting this show and for participating on our Inner Circle site. If you're interested in being an Inner Circle member, of supporting the digital story, the Nimble Photographer, and all the things that we're working on, just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, the Patreon tile. Go over to the site, check it out, and hopefully you too will lend your support. Keep the show alive and happening, creative and evolving. Help me get to 1,000, right? Help me get to 1,000. Hats off to our Inner Circle members. We couldn't do it without you. Also want to mention that we have B&H and Amazon tiles on all the pages of Digital Story. If you're going to buy something that we talk about on this podcast or some other piece of gear, if you will go to the Digital Story first, click on the appropriate tile. It'll take you over to a specials page just because that's fun to look at. But from there, you can navigate to wherever you need to go on those sites, make your purchase, and that helps support the show. And finally, speaking of supporting the show, Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take you to our landing page there. You can learn about printing from all angles, from the kinds of paper that are available, to tutorials on how to make the kinds of things that you want to make, to printer reviews, you know, deciding, hey, I want to up my game with an inkjet printer, what should I get? All that stuff is there. Plus, you can get regular supplies too, such as envelopes, glassine sleeves, even ink. Red River Paper has everything that you need to realize your printing dreams, to make artwork that you can put in other people's hands, that you can hang on the wall, and that you can be proud of. Big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I've got a really fun show in the works for next week. Come back Tuesday. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.